Hello and welcome to The Reading Life, WWNO's weekly look at the New Orleans literary scene. I'm Susan Larson. This week we'll be talking with Matt Sacchichini, author of Roll With It, Brass Bands in the Streets of New Orleans. We'll hear from Denise McConduit, whose new children's book is The Boy Who Didn't Like to Read. She'll be appearing at the New Orleans Children's Book Festival November 16th. And literacy activist Shannon Svetanovic. Ethnomusicologist and journalist Matt Sacchichini also teaches at Tulane University. He first came to New Orleans to work for the public radio program American Roots, and he's pursued his passion for New Orleans music in print and in practice. He's the author of a new book, Roll With It, Brass Bands in the Streets of New Orleans, and he's also the guitarist for one of my favorite bands, Los Polvoisitos. Hi, Matt. Welcome.
Thank you so much, Susan. Good to be here.
Now, in this book, you say that you use brass bands as the intersecting point for your real interests, race, power, and music. And that's a drama that's very much played out in the public eye here.
Absolutely. Well, one of the things I wanted to get across in the book is that these musicians who are celebrated all throughout New Orleans and the world because they just play the happiest, most fun, exciting dance music. And a lot of times the actual lives they lead are the other stereotype that we hear about Black New Orleanians, which is really struggles with poverty, mired in violence in their neighborhoods, and exploited in certain cases by all kinds of institutions. So I wanted to sort of, on the one hand, give this music its due. It's just such great music. And on the other hand, show how through the actual lives of the musicians, you can see how complicated it is for young people coming up in New Orleans as they become professional musicians.
Right. You concentrate primarily on three bands, the Hot Eight, the Rebirth, and the Soul Rebels. I remember when I moved to New Orleans a long time ago, I remember going to somebody's 40th birthday and seeing Rebirth play on a front porch party, and they were like kids, and now they've grown up, you know? And one of the things you capture is that kind of continuity in the community, the way these guys are brought along.
It's absolutely true. For years, I mean, we could go back long before Rebirth to someone like a Louis Armstrong, who comes up essentially playing in brass band music at the time when jazz is emerging, right around 1900 or so when he's born. And at the end of the century, you know, Rebirth is coming out of Clark High School in the early 1980s, and Phil and Keith Frazier, the brothers, are the real backbone of the band, and at that time they've got Kermit Ruffins on trumpet. And the music is much more modern by that point, but the instruments are the same. Those bands are still playing in jazz funerals or neighborhood community parades called second lines, just like Louis Armstrong was. So I think so much of New Orleans music is a balance between continuity, people respect traditions, entering into traditions, but then also changing those traditions to suit their new lifestyles. And that's what I focus on with these three bands who are all men in their 20s, 30s, and 40s, and who grew up into this tradition on the one hand, and on the other hand, they've really made it their own by bringing in hip-hop or whatever other kind of music they grew up listening to.
I know. But the music is so joyous, and there is so much heartbreak in this book. I mean, the book really begins with a funeral, with Harold Dijon's funeral, and he was one of the elders. But there are many other funerals in this book of younger men.
Younger men. I think one of the realizations I had doing this book is just one of those things where, duh, why hadn't I thought about this before, is that the brass band, in a certain sense, relies upon the death of New Orleanians, right? You need people dying to keep this jazz funeral tradition alive. And in the old days, generally those funerals were reserved for prominent older men in the Black community. And by the time I moved here in 1997, there had been a lot of changes in the funeral tradition, and there were women who can now be honored with a jazz funeral. Really, anybody can if the family wants that. And tragically, I think one of the things a lot of us are so aware of in New Orleans and hopeful that it'll change is that too many young people are dying. And not to set aside the tragedy of that, it's also fascinating that these brass bands are playing for their funerals too, and those families want a different type of funeral. It's very hard for them often to be hearing the slow, sad music, too much of that at the beginning. Those are called dirges. So Just a Closer Walk with Thee, which is a song I think a lot of New Orleanians probably know, is actually a traditional dirge that gets started of a jazz funeral. And that still gets played today, but often when young people die, and some of those young people have actually been musicians themselves, it's often hard for the family to hear song after song in that slow, sad style. So the musicians have actually adapted, and they play fewer of those dirges and more of the up-tempo, happy music that's really meant to make the family feel better and to honor the life of the deceased and to celebrate the fact that, we're still here living and we should make the most of our time here.
But you really capture that emotional burden of the musician at that moment. It's so hard, I think.
Can you imagine what it's like to when one of your best friend and coworker dies and you're expected to step up and play music for the funeral, really work in a sense at that moment when you're grieving the loss of somebody? I know when Denaryl Shavers, the drummer for the Hot 8 Brass Band, was murdered in December of 2006. He was 26 years old, and he called his bandmates his brothers. You know, they had really grown up together. And at that point, I reached out to Benny Pete, who's the leader of the Hot 8 Brass Band, and I said, look, you know, if you feel willing to talk about this, I'd love to know what you're feeling right now and what your band is going through. And if not, of course, I understand. But he welcomed me to talk to him, and we talked for hours and hours. And chapter 4 of my book is really following the Hot 8 Brass Band as members of their band are killed, and the musicians have to step forward at that point and play their jazz funeral. And like you said, the burden and the responsibility and the pain of that. I should point out that it was very hard for me to write this chapter because it's very deep emotional material, and I just kept thinking, whatever I've gone through is just to write this is nothing compared to what these guys are going through. And so I really tried to keep that front and center, to tell their story.
Now, this began as a scholarly book, as a dissertation, and kind of took some turns along the way. And you're not just an observer of this culture, you're a participant. And I wonder if you'd talk a little bit about how that vantage point of being a musician helped you in this writing.
Well, I play guitar, and I have for many, many years. Guitar is not an instrument in the brass band, so right. I've actually never played with the brass band. I get asked that all the time, and I never have. But, of course, I have that knowledge. I went to conservatory, and I teach music, so I'm able to talk shop, as it were. If Keith Frazier is going to show me a pattern he plays on the bass drum that he came up with that really is this identifiably Rebirth sound, I'm going to know what he's talking about, and I'm going to know that it's called the Tresillo pattern and that it has roots in Africa and in Latin America. So I have that aspect of it, too. My heart, though, where my heart comes from that I want to answer is that I also know the elation that you feel when you're up on stage and you're performing music and the crowd's really into it. And so much of the music that is New Orleans music is supposed to bring people joy, supposed to get them out there moving and dancing and having a good time. And when you're really connecting with an audience at Jazz Fest, at a club, or for the brass bands out in a street, and you get that feeling, I wanted to make sure that I could capture that feeling so that if you were sitting in Ohio and reading this book and had never heard a brass band before, you could get a sense of how exciting it is and how transformative it can be to feel that music. And so I hope I got that into the book.
Oh, we've been talking with Matt Sacchettini, whose new book is Roll With It, Brass Bands in the Streets of New Orleans. He'll be signing his book Tuesday, November 12th at 6:30 at Garden District Bookshop with Rebirth Brass Band.
That's right.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Sue.
Denise Walter McConduit is a mainstay of the children's literary scene here in New Orleans. She has explored our culture in such works as DJ and the Debutante Ball, DJ and the Zulu Parade, and DJ and the Jazz Fest. In her new book, The Boy Who Wouldn't Read, she takes on something new, a story of the resistant reader. Denise, welcome to The Reading Life.
Thank you, Susan. I'm glad to be here.
So you've left DJ behind in this book. for a boy named Robbie, who inhabits a very different world.
Yes, I have left DJ, I guess you would say, but according to DJ, I haven't left him at all because he swears that this is another story about him because he did not like to read.
Oh, really?
Really.
Does he like to read now?
Loves to. He went to film school and finished his master's in cinematography. And because of that art, he had to read lots of stories. And it just amazed me of how much he got into stories then. I'm like, now you read.
That's great. So what inspired this book out of the DJ series?
Well, what inspired me, actually, I wrote this poem, because really it is a poem, for a reading conference that I attended years ago, and I just thought I would write something for the kids to maybe encourage them to read. Poetry is something I've always done, and I just decided for this reading conference to write something that would encourage children to read and make them see that it's so important, you know, and what could happen if you don't read.
Well, you know, they always say that the perfect children's book is always a poem, even if it doesn't rhyme. You know, it's just that kind of feeling.
That. Yes.
So what happens in this world and in this poem?
This is such a hilarious poem because we have a little mischievous little boy, his name Robbie. His parents try to encourage him to read. The librarian, you know, a lot of parents will say, well, let me check with the library. If you find something interesting, maybe they would read. The librarian brought him tons of books. Still, he wouldn't read. His teacher encouraged him to read. He still wouldn't read. So finally, he wished not to read so much that a magic sorcerer appeared and decided, so you don't like reading? Well, your wish is my command, but one day you'll be the sorriest boy in all the land. And that's when the adventure begins.
It's truly be careful what you wish for.
Be careful what you wish for. You just might get it.
But when the wizard restores words to the world, he really makes your point, doesn't he?
Yes. At the end of the story, the little sorcerer decides to restore the world with words because what happened in the adventure, his money didn't have any worth. Robbie went to take the bus, but he couldn't tell which one to ride because all of the signs were not on the buses. People were crashing cars because the street signs were blank. He went to try to fix himself a meal, but it was quite an ordeal. All the labels were gone. And what he thought were cookies ended up maybe were dog biscuits.
Well, see, words really are important. But I love that when the wizard restores words to the world, he really makes your point in these lines. And I think I'll ask you to read them, if that's okay.
Reading is like magic. I think I've made my case. Without the gift of words, this world's a crazy place. And so the little sorcerer did another magic deed and restored the world with words for the boy who wouldn't read.
And then Robbie becomes an all-time great reader.
Yes, exactly.
Now, I love that the way you show that words and reading are what keep us civil and kind to each other in this book and makes society work in every way.
Exactly. You know, because even his parents just couldn't believe that they had a son that was so resistant to reading. And, you know, like I said before, the cars were crashing. It restores order in a sense because we are so informed. It's subliminal. You don't even realize the power of just the word exit. I realized it when I went to a foreign country. I think I was in either France or Spain. What is Sardifa? One of those words. And, you know, my sisters and I, we were so confused. We're like, is that exit or is that enter? So you see, you know, it gives us instructions and we just take it for granted.
So what's next for you? Will you go back to New Orleans and DJ? I love the idea that DJ is all grown up now.
DJ is all grown up. I know. But I have other projects. I have many projects on the back burner. I want to do a companion book to this book. And it's probably going to be a little girl who doesn't like math. You know, because my granddaughter, Kennedy, she said, well, Granny, what about me? I don't like math. So that, you know, So I said, okay, well, let's try that. So that might be coming up.
Once you have kids, they always want you to write about them sooner
yes,
or later.
They do. Yes, they do.
So I wanted to ask you, you have now a nephew who's followed you into the writing biz, Alex McConduit.
Yes, yes. And he is really a great writer and a little marketer, too. And I have to take tips from him because, I mean, kids nowadays, they use the social media to their advantage. And I just got on Twitter. You know, I've never had to use all of these social media platforms. Mm-hmm. But it's really daunting. But, you know, it's a learning curve.
Brave new world out
there. It's a brave new world.
But Alex, you know, credits you with showing him the way to be a writer, which is really lovely.
That's very sweet. Definitely.
So, well, keep it up. I love, love, love this story. I love the way Robbie comes home to reading like all kids should.
Exactly.
We've been talking with Denise Walter McConduit, whose new book is The Boy Who Wouldn't Read. You can meet her at the New Orleans Children's Book Festival, Saturday, November 16th at Ladder Library. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Susan. I really appreciate it.
Shannon Svetanovich is one of my literary heroines. She's the Executive Director of Educational Services for the YMCA, and she spends her days overseeing adult literacy classes at the main branch of the New Orleans Public Library. I passed by Shannon's office whenever I was downtown and got to know her bright spirit and her determined will, all in the service of teaching people to read. Shannon, I'm so happy to welcome you to The Reading Life.
Susan, thank you so much. I love your show. And I'm glad to be here.
And you know what The Reading Life really means to people.
We are living the reading life at the YMCA, that is for sure. Our mission at the Y is to find unmet needs in our community. And one of those needs, I think, is adult education. We have so many in our community who are struggling with very basic reading, who cannot help their kids with homework. So we are providing free classes at the main branch of the library and the New Orleans East branch as well to give people an opportunity, you know, to improve themselves through education.
One thing that you've told me about a lot is that they're not just trying to improve their reading skills, they're trying to improve their lives.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we have students who are coming to us because, you know, they've been on the job for a few years. Their supervisors see something in them. They see some leadership qualities. They see determination. They see a good worker who shows up every day. And they say, you may want to think about moving up into a supervisory position. But so often those positions require a GED. Or require math skills and reading skills that they simply don't have. You know, so they're coming to us for that. They're coming to us because so many of them want to help their kids. You know, it's devastating to me when a grandparent comes in tears and says, I had to tell my granddaughter I couldn't read for her. You know, I couldn't read a little book to her. And it's just a devastating thing. I can't imagine that. I was read to constantly as a child. You know, all of my memories of youth are around reading and libraries. Mm-hmm. So I cannot imagine not having that be a part of your life.
And you've told me, I know, that some people have come to you as a result of going to church and not being able to read, too.
Oh, definitely. I mean, believe me, you can lie to your boyfriend and girlfriend about your reading level, but if a pastor comes up to you and says, I'd like you to participate in church services, you have to tell the truth. And tell the pastor you're not able to do so. And so that's why pastors are often some of our greatest allies, because they will come to us and say, I have someone who is in my congregation who needs your help. Can we refer them to you? And we're so happy, you know, to take them on.
So how can people get into the program? How do you reach out to them?
A lot of it is word of mouth, to be honest. And we have excellent word of mouth through our students and through people in social services. We also have a presence on our website, which is www.ymcaneworleans.org. People can reach us by calling. Is the first step. And our phone number is 596-3842. And what we do is we test people when they come in to see where they are with their math and reading. Some people come to us and they say, my math is terrible and I can't read. And we test them and guess what? It's much better than they thought it was. Uh-huh. And the relief on their faces is just wonderful to see. And for others, it's the opposite. They don't realize how dire the situation is and how long it's going to take them to get to a GED level. But they call us. We do testing every 8 weeks. When you sign up for our program, you sign up for 8 weeks. And if you attend consistently, you know, your classes with us at the library, we will keep you on for another 8 weeks to keep giving you the help that you need. But the first step is making that phone call, which is so difficult.
And how can volunteers help? Are you looking for volunteers?
Well, the volunteers we do need are people helping us to get the word out. If anyone can come in and grab some flyers from me that they could distribute to different parts of the city, I would so appreciate it. Because again, it's word of mouth that gets the word out. Sometimes someone will see our flyer and they'll just, you know, make a note that they saw the YMCA is doing adult literacy classes, and then someone will ask them, you know, about GED or what have you, and they'll say, yes, I saw that flyer. We need our flyers out there. We need information out there as much as we can get it. The other thing we have is our big fundraiser for the year is the YMCA's Corporate Cup 5K, which is November 17th. We call it the second line for literacy because all proceeds benefit our program, and we can always use help recruiting companies to participate, recruiting individual runners to come out, again, helping us hang flyers, anything like that.
Great. I'm just curious to know some of the great stories from your students.
Oh, I mean, there's so many. I mean, I can think of one young lady that we have who has been with us now for about 3 years. She came to us, and I think she must have been about 20. She had an infant daughter. And this young lady, Susan, when I tell you, could not read. I mean, I'm not saying she had trouble reading. She could not read. So she came to us because, you know, she was by herself. The child's father had moved on, and she was just trying to think of how she can improve herself and improve her daughter's life. So she started coming to us very diligently. 3 years later, her reading has improved. I can't even tell you how much. She's now employed. She's working as a child care attendant at a Head Start. Her daughter is in Head Start. She is now, you know, this young mother is now able to write little notes to her daughter's teachers. And they're not the most elaborate notes, the most literary notes, but they communicate. And that is something that she was never able to do. Whereas before, she would come to us and ask us to help her write notes. Now she's able to do it on her own with real confidence. And so we're just so proud of her for that. You know, we have another woman who's with us now who is working at one of the downtown hotels. And her boss wants her to move up into management. You know, she's an excellent worker, but she's so intimidated by her writing. And she wants to be able to send emails with confidence. But every time she comes in, I have such a place of pride in her because she comes in after work dressed beautifully. You know, she's been at work all day looking fantastic, very professional. She carries herself beautifully. And she just puts her head down and she works for 2 more hours just to improve herself so she can move up. If she succeeds in moving into management, how transformative would that be for her and her son? You know, how transformative would that be in terms of economics for that family, to say nothing about her own sense of self-worth? So we're rooting for her. I want her to make it so badly.
It's a reminder never, ever to take it for granted.
Oh,
never.
That's the thing. I mean, for so many of us who love to read, I mean, again, I think we take it for granted that we're just able to throw open a book or grab a newspaper or even just to walk down the street and read the street signs. During the Hurricane Gustav evacuation, we had one of our students who called me on my cell phone who was trying to get to the pickup point for the city to catch a bus out of town. And he had an idea where he was going, but he couldn't read the signs. So every block, he would spell out the street sign to me so I could make sure he was going in the right direction.
Girl.
And that's just one person. Yeah. When you think of how many struggle with that and how they're so capable of covering it up, you just don't know.
The coping strategies.
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely.
Well, never give up, girl.
That's it.
I know you won't.
I won't.
We've been talking with the great Shannon Svetanovich, who's the hardworking Executive Director of Educational Services for the YMCA. That's a big yes indeed.
Absolutely.
YMCA Educational Services. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Susan, for having me.
Here's what's on tap in the literary life this week. Folklorist Frank DeCaro signs Stories of Our Lives, Memory, History, and Narrative, Tuesday, November 12th at 6 at Octavia Books. Carol Ebersole discusses The Elf on the Shelf, A Birthday Tradition, Tuesday, November 12th at 6 at Barnes & Noble Metairie. Today's guest, Matt Sacchichini, signs Roll With It, Brass Bands in the Streets of New Orleans, Tuesday, November 12th at 6:30 at Garden District Bookshop. Mimi Reed and designer Tom Tom Shearer discuss and sign Tom Shearer Decorates, Wednesday, November 13th at 6 at Octavia Books. Metairie Park Country Day School presents White House photographer Eric Draper, author of A Front Row Seat, a photographic portrait of the presidency of George W. Bush, Wednesday, November 13th at 6:30 in Weinman Auditorium. The lecture begins at 6:30, book signing at 7:45. Poppy Tooker, with moderator Jill Benson, discusses Louisiana Eats, the people, the food, and their stories, Wednesday, November 13th at 7 at East Bank Regional Library in Metairie. Nia Terrazakis signs Artful Feast, an elegant lifestyle for dining, Thursday, November 14th at 6 at Maple Street Bookshop. Princeton University professor Changrai Lee, author of Native Speaker, Aloft, The Surrendered, and A Gesture Life, reads Thursday, November 14th at 7 in the Freeman Auditorium in the Woldenburg Art Center at Tulane University. This is part of the English Department's Writers Writer Series. Angela Carl signs Where the Writers Wrote in New Orleans, Saturday, November 16th at 1 at Garden District Bookshop. Diane de las Casas and Holly Stone Barker sign The House That Santa Built, Saturday, November 16th at 1:30 at Octavia Books. Janet Wyman Coleman signs Eight Dolphins of Katrina, A True Tale of Survival, Sunday, November 17th at noon at Garden District Bookshop. Gina Ferrara reads from and signs Amber Porchlight, Monday, November 18th at 6 at Octavia Books. And there are lots of big events coming up this weekend. The New Orleans Children's Book Festival, hosted by First Lady Cheryl Landrieu and Ruby Bridges, returns for the fourth time, featuring an array of children's book authors, Saturday, November 16th, from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. at Ladder Library, 5120 St. Charles Avenue. On Friday, November 15th at 7:30, the Greater New Orleans Youth Orchestra will present a concert of music inspired by children's literature on the lawn of Ladder Library. Bring a picnic basket and maybe a blanket. For complete information, check out nolabookfest.org. The New Orleans Book Fair and Media Expo takes place Saturday, November 16th from 11 to 5 at the Contemporary Arts Center Warehouse. Come see gorgeous small press books and zines. For more info, check out neworleansbookfair.com. After the NOLA Book Fair, wander over to the G&O Food Company, 935 Gravier Street, for an exhibit of book art and a silent auction sponsored by the Women's National Book Association of New Orleans. For more information about that, check out artofthebooknola.wordpress.com. And for more book arts, don't miss the exhibit Horizon, a nationally touring exhibit presented by the Guild of Book Workers. It features 53 works celebrating leading examples of book arts today. You can see it in the gallery on the fourth floor of the Monroe Library at Loyola University. And as today's guest, Shannon Svetanovic, reminds us, we can support literacy programs with the Second Line for Literacy Race, Sunday, November 17th at 8:30 a.m. in City Park. For more information, check out ymcaneworleans.org. The Jewish Community Center Book Fair is also coming up. Austin Ratner discusses and signs In the Land of the Living, a novel, at the Book Fair Luncheon Monday, November 18th at noon at the JCC. Sherry Fink discusses and signs her best-selling book, 5 Days at Memorial, Life and Death in a Storm-Ravaged Hospital, Wednesday, November 20th at 7. For details and tickets, contact the JCC at 504-897-0143. Major support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books. Additional support comes from the Christwood Retirement Community, Our Lady of Holy Cross College, and the University of Louisiana at Lafayette Press. The theme song and end music for The Reading Life is by Matt Perrine and Sunflower City. The Reading Life is produced by Jenny Lawson and is a production of WWNO. You can listen to us anytime or subscribe to our podcast at wwno.org. Or you can email us anytime at thereadinglife@wwno.org. I'm Susan Larson. Thanks for listening and keep reading.